Okay, this week we're looking at the story of Esther 8, and we're almost at the end of the story of Esther. It's been a bit of a journey, and I was trying to figure out what I should talk about this week, and it came to me the question, what is the most dangerous thing that Esther does in this story? Because this is a story about risk and about danger. And so I was thinking about what is it that is the most risky bit of what Esther does in this story? And to answer that, I want to get you to think about your family. So families can be really embarrassing. And I don't know if you've ever been in a situation when you've gone out for dinner with your family, you've been in some sort of public place, maybe at the park. I don't know. I know we can't go out to restaurants at the moment, but just imagine you're somewhere with your family and they just start to do really embarrassing things. I'm sure we've all been in these situations where you go to a restaurant and, you know, maybe your dad farts in public, or maybe your mom is criticizing the things that you're wearing. Maybe your siblings are just being really annoying and making stupid jokes, or maybe you're a parent and you feel a bit embarrassed about what your kids are wearing, or maybe they're swearing in public or doing things that make you feel embarrassed. But, you know, we all know that families can be embarrassing, right? And there's those moments where you would rather be at home and you would rather not be with these people. Even though you love them, sometimes you don't want to be associated with them. All right. Now imagine if owning up to being part of your family, saying, yeah, they're my family, was not only embarrassing, but would risk your death. So you could either say, yep, they're my family, and you would die, or you could say, no, they're not my family, and you would live. This is really the question or the challenge that Esther has in this story. She has to decide whether she's going to own up to being part of God's family, to say, yes, I am a Jewish person. And it's not only a matter of embarrassment, but of real life and death risk. So that's what I want to talk about today, is about owning up to being part of God's family and the risk that Esther takes to do that. So we've heard this long story of Esther, and I just want to remind you of the details. She's been in this kind of twisted version of The Bachelor. We've got this king who's trying to find this one perfect woman. And, you know, it might seem kind of a bit funny at first, but then you begin to realize, like, this is actually some sort of twisted sex scenario where the king's having sex with all of these young women. And we've got to remember that Esther is probably a teenager. But somehow the king really likes her. He picks her and he makes her the queen. And she ends up in this situation where, on the one hand, she's really powerless. She's been forced into this situation out of her choice. But on the other hand, she has this opportunity to speak up. And the good thing is she does speak up. She says something. And there's this plot to kill the Jewish people by this guy Haman. She says, hey, king, this is happening. Can you save me? And the king steps in. He saves Esther, and he saves Mordecai, Esther's uncle/cousin. Mordecai's promoted. Haman, the villain, he gets executed, and everything's going pretty well. It's all looking pretty good. And at this point in the story, it almost seems like the story's over, right? At the end of chapter 7, the start of chapter 8, it's like Esther's, you know, she seems pretty safe. Haman's dead. Mordecai's been given a new job, and life seems pretty good. But actually, the story is not over. We haven't reached the end of it yet. And we're going to hear a little bit more next week about that. But today, I just want to focus on thinking about this second time that Esther comes and speaks to the king. So she's spoken to him once and she said, hey, king, Haman, he's a bit dodgy. He's dangerous. The king's gotten rid of Haman. But now she has this choice. Am I going to speak up again, or am I just going to let it slide? And as we come to the end of this story, I think there's a few mistakes we can make about trying to understand what the story is and isn't about. So I want to start by telling you guys a few things that this story is not about, the things that the story of Esther is not trying to teach us. So the first one of those is, it's not about justifying violence. So we see there's this genocide that's going to be committed against the Jews. They're going to be killed off by all the Persian Empire. They're at huge risk. And what happens is the king says, well, the Jews, yep, they can defend themselves. They can fight back. They can get their revenge. Anyone that tries to kill them, they can kill them in return. And I just want to say, this story is not about how we should do that. It's not saying if someone tries to kill you, you should kill them right back. This is not an eye for an eye, a genocide for a genocide. That God's purposes are at work, but it's the king that decides this decree that says, oh, well, the solution is going to be, you know, you can all kill your attackers. So it's not trying to justify violence. I just want to say that not everything in the Bible that happens is encouraged. Sometimes these are just stories of the events, and we're actually trying to see the bigger picture, the bigger story of what God's doing. So it's not about revenge. It's not about how we should be vengeful as the church. The second thing that it's not about is it's not about seeking power. You might read this story and think, well, Esther, she got to this really significant position, and that was what enabled her to protect her people. And so maybe we as Christians should be seeking out positions of power and influence in politics, in government, in other places, and then we can do stuff to protect the church and protect the image of the church. And I think certainly there's a lot of Christians that seem to think this way, that we should be seeking power in institutional settings so that we can look after the church. But that's actually not what this story is about either, because both Esther and Mordecai, they find themselves in these positions really by accident. It's not something that they plan. You know, Esther is chosen almost at random in this kind of sexual lottery. She doesn't have any control in this situation. She didn't seek it out. And Mordecai is promoted because he did something to save the king, but it wasn't his plan. He wasn't saying, I'm going to become the prime minister of the empire. It's just something that happened because God was working behind the scenes. So we shouldn't read this story and think we should be trying to seek power so we can protect the church. That's not what it's about. The third thing that it's not about is it's not about how government always works. You know, you might read this story and say, well, Xerxes, you know, he did the right thing eventually. He protected the Jews. You know, he saved the day. Actually, that's not the story here either. Xerxes, he's an incompetent leader. He's horrible. He's selfish. He's not really concerned about his, you know, his people. He's not concerned about the Jews. He's just kind of the guy that does whatever he feels like on the day. Today, he's in a good mood. Esther, he likes Esther, she's all right, and so he listens to what she has to say. But another day, he listened to Haman, and tomorrow it might be something else. So this isn't a story about how government always works. We should just trust, you know, the government, they'll do the right thing. Sometimes governments are going to do the right thing, and sometimes they're not. And we see Xerxes in this story doing a bit of both. Sometimes he's reliable, sometimes he's not. So it's not saying we should just trust the government all the time, 100%, and it'll be fine. And the last thing this story is not about is it's not a guidebook about how to stop violence. You might read it and think, maybe this is a guide about how I could stop, you know, some sort of atrocity from happening. You know, what would that be? Well, step one, have sex with the king. Step two, become the queen. Step three, speak to the king. It doesn't make sense like that. So it's not a guide about how to prevent violence either. It's not about that either. Don't think that God is always going to stop horrible things from happening in the world. He's not always going to stop atrocities. And that's not the story here either. So most things that happen in the story are not an example for us of what to do. Most of the things that are going on are really horrible. They're really messed up. But what we're supposed to see is how Esther and Mordecai are responding to these situations, maintaining that faith in God. Okay, it's not a guidebook about what to do, what not to do. It's more of like an example to us of character, of what it means to be somebody who follows God and identifies with God's people. And it's kind of a funny story, isn't it, right? So I don't know if you thought of it from this angle, but the ending is kind of unexpected because really, for half the book, things are looking really bad. So it looks like the Jews are going to be killed. You know, Esther's at risk. There's this really dodgy guy in control of government. Mordecai is going to be executed. But then everything starts to turn around. Everything starts to turn upside down. So Haman, he makes this stake that he's going to execute Mordecai on. And instead, he gets impaled on it. Right? Mordecai's life is threatened. But then he becomes the prime minister. He gets promoted. The Jews, even at the start of the story, the Jews are refugees, they're enslaved people, and somehow Esther, one of these Jews who's a teenager, becomes the queen and has this unexpected opportunity to speak to the king. But then it really turns out that being the queen is mostly just being a sex slave and being controlled. But then she still finds this way to exercise this political power through this relationship, this kind of messed up relationship that she's in. And we see in this chapter and towards the end of the book, we have this day of grief where the Jews are expecting that everything is going to go wrong. But instead, by the end of the chapter, it becomes a day of celebration. And we see, you know, the Jews are at risk of being wiped out, but in the end, actually, their numbers grow. So this is kind of a story of everything works out the opposite of how you think that it's going to go. It's an unexpected story. It's meant to be a bit ironic and a bit surprising. And, you know, at the end of chapter 7, it would be pretty easy for Esther to quit because she's already spoken up. The villain's been executed. Her uncle's been promoted. Probably she and her immediate family are going to be fine. Like, they're probably safe at this point. And so she could say right now, everything's all good for me. I'm pretty safe. I'm not going to get killed in this massacre. The king's going to protect me. So, you know, why not just quit while I'm ahead and just leave it at that? But she decides that she's going to speak up a second time. She goes to the king and she says, hey, King Xerxes, hubby, you need to do something about this. Not only was Haman, he was a dodgy guy. You've killed him. You sorted that out. Sure, my uncle's been promoted. But there's a bigger issue here. And that is that the Jewish people, my family, are going to be killed. And you need to do something. You need to save them. So she risks her life a second time. She comes into the king's presence a second time. Even though he's such an unpredictable person, she doesn't really know what he's going to do. And the reason that she does this is because she's Jewish. So she could have just left it as being this issue between herself, her uncle, and Haman, sorted that out, and then moved on. But I want to tell you that the most dangerous thing that Esther does in this story is to tell the king that she's Jewish. And not only does she do that, but then in chapter 8, she reminds him that she's Jewish. She lets him know again. You know, she's safe at the start of the chapter, but each time she risks speaking to the king, she's risking divorce, she's risking banishment, she's risking execution. And you guys remember what happened with Xerxes' previous queen at the start of the story. Just for, you know, refusing to come to a party, he divorced her, got rid of her, and had sex with hundreds of random women. So Esther honestly doesn't know what Xerxes is going to do. It's not like she knows that if she speaks up again, he's going to respond as well the second time. It's still this huge risk, this huge unpredictable factor about what's going to happen. And at the start of this chapter, we've got to remember the genocide is still going ahead. Even though all these good things have happened, the genocide is still happening. The Jews are still going to be destroyed at this point in the story. But she goes to the king and she says this. This is 8 verse 6. How can I bear to see disaster fall on my people? How can I bear to see the destruction of my family? Her family. She's reminding the king, the Jewish people, they're not just your subjects, they're my family. And in doing so, she's risking her life again. You see, Esther, she's not remembered for being the queen. She's remembered for being courageous. It's her courage that God uses to do something amazing. The only thing she has to do is to tell the king and remind the king that she's Jewish. She knows that she can be killed for being a Jew. That's what this genocide is about. They're trying to kill off all the Jewish people and she's Jewish. So the question I want to ask is, are we willing to be known to be Christians? Are we willing to own up to being God's people in the way that Esther does here? This year, I started working in a new job. As you guys know, I finished up as the youth minister at the end of 2020, and I've been working in a secular organization doing youth work. And it's been quite interesting to think about, how do I operate as a Christian person in a secular space? And, you know, there's actually some risks with owning up to being a Christian, isn't there? All right, so you might risk, if you say to somebody, I'm a Christian, they might think you're pretty weird, kind of weird religious person. They might be offended if they've had some negative experiences with church in the past. They might hate you. They might just say, Christians are rubbish and I don't want anything to do with them. And you know what, for me, even applying for the job, you know, first thing on my resume, I used to work for a church. That's not the best way to get a secular youth work job. It doesn't actually look that good. It's not that cool to be a Christian in a secular youth work position, because the history is actually really bad. When people think about church Christianity, they think about, you know, institutionalized abuse. They think about the stolen generation, mistreatment of Aboriginal people. The church doesn't have the best history in Australia of how we've cared for children and for young people. And so there's a real risk for my work to own up to being a person of faith. But I made the decision, even though I felt a bit nervous about this, I made the decision early on to say to my co-workers, to my boss, and when the opportunity does sometimes come up, I can say it to young people I'm working with, that I am a Christian, at least. And the reason I do that is because being a Christian is a matter of life or death. You know, knowing Jesus is a life or death thing. You see, how can people come to know Jesus if they don't even know that I know Jesus? And if people don't know Jesus, how can they find life in him? So I've chosen to be upfront about it, even though there's a potential cost, because it's worth it, because it's a life or death thing. I'm going to talk more about that. So I want to remind you, the most risky thing that Esther does in this story is she owns up to being Jewish. For this, she risked death. Sometimes we won't even risk being laughed at by our friends. But yet here we have Esther risking death to just say, yep, I'm one of God's people. And you know what? It might be embarrassing. Sometimes it might be like social suicide. It might be kind of awkward. There might be real costs in your life to owning up to being a Christian. But let's look at what happens as a result. So if we read verse 17 of chapter 8, it says, "In every province and in every city to which the edict of the king came, there was joy, there was gladness, there was feasting and celebration, and many people of other nationalities became Jews, because the fear of the Jews had seized them." So not only are people saved, but more people become Jews. More people start following God. You see, you never know what God might do when you start owning up to who your family is. When you start saying, yes, I am a Jesus follower. I am part of a church community. You know, God is actually great at exceeding our expectations. Do you think that Esther knew what God was going to do when she spoke up? You know, maybe the Jews would have been saved, but she would have been killed. She doesn't know what's going to happen. She's probably thinking in her head, there's like a 50-50 chance here of how this is going to work out. Maybe 50% chance that everything's going to be fine, and a 50% chance that I'm going to be in some serious trouble. So we don't know what's going to happen when we speak up, right? We should be expecting, though, that if we own up to having a faith, that maybe half the time people are not going to be happy and we're going to get some negative feedback, and half the time God is going to exceed our expectations and do something more than what we might expect. Because God actually wants to see people become Christians more than we do. He's more interested in this than we are. He's just waiting for an opportunity to use us for his purposes. You see, if we identify with Jesus, with the family of God, then we get to be part of seeing new people come to faith. How exciting is that? And you know, sometimes we might think, why does no one ever become a Christian? What's God doing? Where is he? But I want to turn that question back on us. What are we doing? Do we have the courage to say, yes, I am a Christian. I am a part of God's family. And I guarantee you that if you do that, if you publicly identify with Jesus and you take those opportunities to speak up, that somebody will become a Christian. Maybe not every week, maybe not every year, but you will see somebody come to faith in your life. And that is actually the most amazing thing. And some of you guys have experienced this. Some of you know what that's like, to share something about your faith and then to see God use that to bring a person into his family. It is the most exciting thing in the world. So I want you to imagine we're in the next life. We've all passed away, hopefully not from COVID. But imagine we're there and we're in front of the ultimate king. We're in front of the throne of God. And God is judging people and he's deciding what's going to happen with people in the next life. And imagine for a second that Jesus doesn't speak up for us. Imagine God says to us, Who are you? Where have you come from? And he says to Jesus, Jesus, who is this person? Do you know this guy? And Jesus is embarrassed. Imagine he's embarrassed for the things that we've done, the embarrassing or silly things, or maybe the horrible, evil things that we've done in our life. And he says, they're not part of my family. I don't know them. What's going to happen? We're going to be done at that point. We're finished. We're dead. You see, it's only because Jesus is willing to identify with us that we can celebrate, that we have a future. It's because he says, they're part of my family, that we get to have that future with God. So the least we can do is to do the same. Anything less than that is honestly, it's a bit ungrateful. It's a bit disrespectful to him and to his sacrifice. So let's not be like that. Let's not kind of be shy or be afraid to tell people, yes, I'm a follower of Jesus, because Jesus is not afraid to say that of us. You know, we think sometimes when we're talking about church or talking about our faith, we think that we're just talking about an everyday thing, like, oh, I'm a Christian, you're something else, blah, blah, blah. But actually, this is a life or death thing, right? And, you know, it's just like with Esther, her situation, saying I'm part of God's family, it was a life or death situation. And for us, it actually is too. And we need to remember that for people, in terms of their ultimate future, their ultimate life, this is a life or death thing. So Jesus, he gave his death for our life. And we offer our life to God so that we can join in the benefits of Jesus' death. So don't be embarrassed, don't be awkward when the opportunity comes up to identify with Jesus. You might just be saving someone's life.